Okay, we begin here on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, five lines down, Tashma. Gemara here is continuing to search for the answer as to whether when you have a Kinyan Agav, do you require that the metaltalim be tzvurim, that they should be placed on the karka itself, stacked on the karka, or do you not require tzvurim, it's just the nature of the Kinyan, that the Kinyan karka can bring along the metaltalim, even though they're not physically associated with each other. So here again, we're trying another proof. Tashma, Damarova Bar Yitzchak Omarav, Shnei Shtarot Heim. There are two types of Shtarot. Zchu, Beste Zo de Ploni. Go ahead and take possession of this field for so-and-so. V'chitvulo et Ashtar. And also write for him a Shtar about this transaction. Chuzer v'Shtar, Veinu Chuzer v'Sadeh. The seller has the right to back out of giving the Shtar, but he does not have a right to back out of the giving of the field. That is because he told these parties to take possession of the field on behalf of the individual who was buying it, receiving it. And so therefore, Zochin Shadam Shelo Bifanav. They took possession for him or in behalf of him. And now the mocher or the grantor cannot change his mind about that because the kinyan was already done. Whereas for the shtar, that was an instruction for them to write the shtar. And he can withdraw that instruction because there was no kinyan over there to finalize that action. And therefore he can back out of the shtar. He can't back out of the sadeh. Tosafot asks your question. Tosafot says, what does it matter that he can back out of the shtar? In the meantime, the sadeh is his. So why wouldn't he write him a shtar? So Tosafot asks your question. Im tomar, mar yaviach bazem yachzor b'shtar. Kevin shal yachzor b'sadeh. Backing out of the shtar does nothing for him now. V'yesh lomar. He doesn't want a shtar to be out in the public domain. Because a shtar is a much more of a public declaration than a dim, and that's why we say there's only an encumbrance when you do it through shtar, because then other people know about the fact that there is a creditor or there's a lien on this land. So people will think that he's having to sell his properties out of pressure, out of monetary necessity. And they'll think that he's poor now, they're not going to want to lend him money. So it will cause him problems in his business standing to have the shtar out there. So there is a value for him not to have the shtar out there, even if he has sold the field or he can't back out of the selling the field. Others suggest that it might help with regards to achrayut, with regards to recourse. Meaning that if you don't have a shtar, there may not be any recourse on the field, as opposed to if you just sell the field, then it's a sale bal peh, but there might not be any achrayut associated with that. So for that reason, he wants to back out of the shtar. On the other hand, the other shtar that he says is, amanat shetichtavu lo at ashtar. Give him the field on the condition that you write him a shtar. Meaning that both of these prices, I want you to write him the shtar in order that he can take possession of the field. Choser ben b'shtar ben b'sadeh. Over here he can back out of both of them because he did not give it over to them to acquire on his behalf. Simply said to them, write the shtar, and then the shtar, once it's given to him, that would finalize the transaction. The fact that it's not been given to him means that the transaction is not finalized and he can back out of both. He can withdraw the sadeh and he can withdraw the shtar. Now even though the word amanat we've seen before, almanat means me'achshav, from now. Which is that when you make a tznai of me'achshav, it says whatever it maisa is happening now, defective date is immediately, and just there's a condition built into it. That was the way that we learned the lashon about minat. So over here you have to say that that isn't the case because it's clear that he's trying to generate the kinyan through the shtar. And therefore the almanat can't be interpreted of me'achshav, because then it would undermine the instruction of giving the shtar. So therefore you have to interpret the almanat over here as not being me'achshav. The Ramban says he doesn't even understand the question, because even if you say almanat means me'achshav, that just means that it's effective immediately if you fulfill the condition. And he has no obligation to fulfill the condition. He can do as he pleases if he wants to fulfill the condition, if he doesn't want to fulfill the condition. The only chidush here might be the fact that here the tnai, the condition is for the benefit of the recipient, not the benefit of the seller or the gifter which is generally the case when it comes to a tanai. The tanai is generally for the benefit of the party who is doing the maaseh. Over here, the tanai is actually to the benefit of the recipient, which is not a standard type of tanai, and therefore it does not have to conform to the normal prescription of tanai b'nei Gad u b'nei Ruvain. And so maybe that's the chiddush over here. Rav Chiba ben Amar, Ravuna, Shlosha Shtorotain. There are actually three different types of shtorot. Trei Hadamran, the two that we already mentioned. Idach, the third one is Im Kadam Mocher, Vikatav Lo Et Hashtar. What happens if the Mocher writes the shtar in advance of the transaction? Kota Shashanino, like we have learned, Kodvim Shtar the Mocher, Afopish En Lokeachimo. You're allowed to write a shtar for the Mocher, even though the purchaser is not present, because it's to the detriment of the Mocher, to the benefit of the Lokeach. So there's no reason not to write the shtar. Your only fear is that it's a shtar mukdam, that they're writing the shtar prior to the transaction date, which puts the lien on the property much earlier. So keven sheichziki mo bakarka, nikna shtar b'chol makom shu. When you take possession of the land, you automatically get the shtar along with it, with the kinyan agav. Meaning that you take possession of the karka, and the shtar comes along with that kinyan akarka. Shma mina lo binin tzburim ba. From there you can see that you don't need it to be directly on the karka, because here he has the shtar by the sofer, or he wrote the shtar. It doesn't say over here you need the shtar on the karka. It just simply says when you take a kinyan akarka, the shtar comes along with it. Mar says, shiny shtar, dafsira d'arahu. That a shtar is different because it's like the reins of the land, meaning that it's an extension of the land. Here it's not separate from the land. It's not your generic metaltalin or something that you're trying to acquire along with the land. It's part and parcel of the sale and part and parcel of the land. So that would make it that it's not a classic case. In this case, you don't need it to be on there. But that's because it's so tied or so connected to the land that the kinyan works even if it's not on the land. But otherwise, that would not be the case. Meaning that regular metaltalim, you would need them on the land, so you can't prove anything from here. Now Rashi points out, even though here, when you're writing the shtar for the mocher, you could end up with a shtar mukdam, he says, V'lo amrinin shtar mukdamu, came into kanu minei mehashto. Since you're acquiring it right away, meaning that as soon as you take possession of the land, you take possession of the shtar, it's as if you got the shtar at that moment, therefore it's not a shtar mukdam. Inami kiavayid amar idav bechatumav zachin lo. Or by the signatories to the shtar, they are zocheh, or they give him basically rights in the shtar. Therefore, the rights start from the time that they sign the shtar, not necessarily when he makes the kinyan, and therefore it's not a shtar mukdam. So for that reason, this will not be deemed a shtar mukdam, either because you're taking possession of it with the possession of the land, or because we're holding Rabbi Meir, who says that the signatories are what make the shtar effective. And those signatories basically give you the rights and grant you those rights then, and therefore it's not a shtar mukdam. Mar says, Va'atani Allah, Va'alaktani, on that, right, don't we have the following statement? Zohi Shishaninu. This is a case of Nechasim She'en Lehem Achrayut, Nikneim Nechasim She'esh Lehem Achrayut. So here the Gemara qualifies it and says that that's the definition of having Nechasim She'esh Lehem Achrayut, real property, acquire non-real property in a kinyan agav. So it doesn't call it an exceptional case. It calls it a classic case of kinyan agav. If that's the case, then if you could do that, nickname that, Nechasim She'esh Lehem Achrayut, nickname Nechasim She'esh Lehem Achrayut, Bekesef, Bishtar, Bechazakah, through the forms of kinyan that work by real property, if you're able to acquire Nechasim She'esh Lehem Achrayut, Shma Mina, Lo Binin Tzvurim, Ba Shma Mina. From here, you have a clear proof that you do not need it to be on the land directly. Because here we're talking about the shtar that was written in advance, which is definitely not on the land. And so that shtar you're acquiring through an ikinyan. We said maybe a shtar is exceptional. The answer is that the Gemara over there has a qualification that says that's a classic case of kinyan agav. So from here, the Gemara concludes that kinyan agav does not require tzvurin. And now the Gemara moves on and says, Ibai lehu. Mi bein an agav olo. Do we require agav or not? Shiomar lo kenei karka v'kenei metaltin agaba. Do you have to specify or do you have to articulate the kinyan agav? When it says tashma, duktoni kohani, velotani agav. That we have all these cases over here and we never say it saying agav. When it says lutameich kenei miktoni. Wait a minute. In none of these cases does it say kenei either. And we know for sure that you have to say Knei. Ella, Adamar Knei. So too in all these other cases, even though it's not explicit, it's implicit that he would have to say Knei. Akanami Adamar Gav. So to here, you would have to require this thing of Agav. Behilchata. The loch is, Tvorim lo be'inan, Agavu Knei be'inan. So the loch is that we do not require that they be Tvorim on the karka, but we do require that you say Agav Uknei. Now, the question is, does it make a difference? Once the Gemara has now established that Tzvurim is not necessary, it's Tzvurim or non-Tzvurim work for a Kinyan Agav, is there any difference qualitatively in the nature of the Kinyan? So, if you look in the Rambam, so the Rambam says the reason that Kinyan Agav works is because the Metaltalin are subordinate to the Karka, and when you make the Kinyan the Karka, it draws along or takes along with it the Metaltalin that are there. So now, do you have to say Knei, and you have to say Agav? Does the Makneh, when he gives it over to him, have to give that instruction or make it clear that there's a Kinyan being done here, take possession of it, and Agav, and you're going to do it with a Kinyan Agav? Does the Makneh have to say that? So normally we say yes, that whenever you have a Kinyan, the Mocher has to say, take possession of it, and then if it's an obvious Kinyan, then he doesn't have to say anything more. But here, where the Kinyan is being done Agav, he has to say Knei and Agav. But what the Rambam says is because the whole reason is that the Metaltalin are subordinate to the Karka, in the case when they're Tzvurim, when they're piled up on the Karka, you do not need to say it because they are automatically Tzvelim the Karka. It's only when the Metaltalin are separate from the Karka do I need to specify that they are going Agav the Karka, because I have to define them as being subordinate to the Karka. But where they're physically placed in the Karka, that's automatic. Of course they are subordinate to the karka because they're on the karka itself. And that makes them subordinate, and therefore you do not need to use the word agav. The Raivad there disagrees and says that really the tfeilut or the subordination emanates from the kinyan itself. It's by the way that you express the kinyan. Kinyan agav. And therefore you would have to say knev agav irrespective of whether they are svarim or not svarim in the karka. So that's the machloket in the Rambam and the Raivad as to whether in the end there is a nafkamina, whether they're tzvurim on the karka or not. Again, the Gemara says we're indifferent now. Whether they're tzvurim or not, the Kinyan Agav works. The Rambam nevertheless maintains there is a difference between them in the way that you execute the Kinyan or you express the Kinyan. When they are not tzvurim on the karka, you have to say Knei and you have to say Agav. Whereas when it comes to tzvurim on top of it, you don't need the Lashon of Agav because it's automatic. Akin to fixtures or things that are in a house that automatically come along with the house. On the other hand, the Raivad believes that the Kinyan Agav works because of the Kinyan itself. It's nothing to do with the relative relationship between the Metaltalin and the Karka, but it's because the Kinyan has the ability to function that way, and you have to identify it as a Kinyan in that manner. And then that is irrespective of whether it's Tzvurim or not Tzvurim, you still have to say that Knei and Agav, that you're using a Kinyan Agav. So according to the Raivad, there is no nafkamina la'alocha, whereas according to the Rambam, there is a nafkamina la'alocha afterwards. The other question is, can you use a kinyan agav with regards to hefker? Meaning that, do you require what's called a dat makneh? Do you require a granting party in a kinyan agav? Or is a kinyan agav the type of kinyan that you can do even when there is no other party there? To go and pick something up, to do a kinyan agbah, you can do that whether the seller is granting you or telling you to take possession of it, or whether you're picking up an aveda, some lost object, you can pick it up and do a kinyan agbah independent. Kinyan agav, does kinyan agav require a dat makneh? Or does kinyan agav work like any other kinyan? So, the Tzota Choshen says, from the Rambam you can see that when you have tzvurim on the land, then you don't need the makneh to say to you agav or knei because they automatically come along with the karka. So over there you see that you don't need the makneh involved if you can overcome that deficit. Well, there you can overcome the deficit because there's tzvurim on the land. And he says the same thing by Nixei Ager. The Kinyan Agav works because there is no deficit here. The person who's granting the rights, he's gone already. The only thing you need to do is take possession of it. Your Kinyan Agav can work because it doesn't require that makneh. On the other hand, the Netivot HaMishpat says that it does not work. And he says, because where do we learn Kinyan Agav from? We learned it out from the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim, where it says, Vayitein lahem matanot im arei mitzurot biyuda, that he gave him gifts with the arei mitzurot in Yehuda. Vayitain lahem means that he gave them to him. That means that you need a dat makneh. Since you need a dat makneh, kinyan agav would not work by the possessions of a ger. So that's again a derivative of that machloket between the Rambam and the Raibud. You also have this machloket about kinyan agav with regards to hefker, machloket between the Todah Choshen and the Tibot Mishpat. So again, over here, that's the machloket between the Rambam and the Raibud. The conclusion of the Gemara over here says that you don't require tzvurim. Is that then the next statement, agav uknei be'inan, is only in the case where it's not tzvurim? Or are these two separate and independent statements? One statement is you don't require tzvurim. The other statement is that you do require knei and agav. And that's independent of the tzvurim. And that's the way that the Raivad learns, as opposed to the Rambam, who sees them as being connected. The reason you need agav and knei here is because they were not tzvurim. But in the case of tzvurim, you would not require agav and knei. Yibailu. If you have a field that you are selling, but you're gifting the metaltalim, can you do any kinyan agav in that case? Because you're using different types of kinyanim here. One's a kinyan mecher, one's a kinyan matana. Now, if you were selling both the field and the metaltalim, then kinyan agav works for sure. The question is here, if you want to give a gift through a kinyan agav of mecher, does it work? Right, so the pasuk in Divrei Yamim talks about a gift on a gift, and our assumption is that mecher on mecher would also work. Right. Question is, when you mix and match mecher and matana, can you do that? Tashma. So we go back to the case that we ended with yesterday, which was the case of Rabban Gamliel on the boat, and Rabban Gamliel over there was granting rights to Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya and to Rabbi Akiva. And it says isur shani atid lamud. That maaser that I'm going to take off in the future, not only Yoshua ben Hananya, is given to Yoshua ben Hananya, who was a Levi, umikomo muskarlo, and the location upon which it sits is rented out to him. Shma mina. So from here you see that it does work. Because the maaser rishon is a netina, it's a matana. He's not selling the maaser rishon to him, he's giving him the maaser rishon. How is he doing it? What's the vehicle for acquisition? Is mikomo muskarlo. That I'm renting him the location under it, which is a case of mecher, and we saw over there that they actually give him money. They actually give him some money to rent it, and by doing so, they have mecher, quote-unquote, with regards to the land that's underneath it, and then the matana, the maser on top of it, goes along with it. So you see that there is a kinyan agav when you have a matana on top of a mecher. Tosafot just notes over here, why did he have to rent them the land? Why didn't he do a kinyan chalipin over here? He could have done a kinyan chalipin, given them the land through a kinyan chalipin. Why does it say here that he rented them the land and they had to pay for the rental of the land in order to acquire the maser? So Tosfot over here says, "B'shema schirut ina nikne b'chalipin." Maybe kinyan chalipin doesn't work by schirut. By renting, kinyan chalipin is not a good enough kinyan. And therefore, he had to use a alternate way to get them the land. And that's why he used kesef. That's why he used the Haskara, the monies to create the rental, rather than doing a kinyan chalipin. So that's Tosafot's question. Why don't you use a kinyan chalipin for the rental over here? The answer might be that kinyan chalipin doesn't work by rentals. And that's why you have to use the money. Right now, the Gemara says, Yibailu, sadeh le'achad, u'metaltalim le'acher mahu. If the field belongs to one party, and the metaltalim are belonging to another party, does that work? Can we have that work as a kinyan agav? The instructions of the makne are, he says to the owner of the field, Kne asadeh, latzmecha, you take acquisition of this field, vagaba, yiknu metaltalim leploni. And with it, you'll take possession of the metaltalim for so-and-so, for a third party. Nothing to do with between us, but I want you to take possession on behalf of this other party. So does the kinyan agav work with two different parties? One party who is the recipient of the field, and one party who is the recipient of the metaltalim. So is the kinyan of the karka for the one who is buying or receiving the karka work to take along the metaltalim of the other person on his behalf? So Gemara says, again, Tashma, Isur Shani Atid Lamud, Natun Akiva Ben Yosef. The Maisar Ani that I'm going to take off in the future is given to Rabbi Akiva, Kadesh Yizke Bodhi Aniim, so that he will take it on behalf of the poor, because he was the Gabai Staka, Umikomo Muskarlo, and the location upon which it sits is rented to him. So now, what's happening over here? You have Rabbi Akiva renting the land. So Rabbi Akiva now is taking possession of the land, And the Meiser that sits on it is Meiser Ani. That's not his Meiser. It's Meiser for him to distribute on behalf of Rabbi Gamliel to the Aniyim. And in doing so, he's taking possession of the Meiser Ani for the Aniyim. That means that it's his land, and the Metaltalin are the Meiser Ani, which belongs to the Aniyim. So his acquisition of the land brings along the Metaltalin of the Aniyim. So you see, it does work. But it says, no, maybe my Muskar. What does it mean that it's rented? Muskar Lemaser. It's not that he rented it directly to Rabbi Akiva, but rather he rented it on behalf of the parties, the Aniyim. So just like Rabbi Akiva is the representative of the Aniyim with regards to the Meiser Ani, when he takes possession or he rents the land, he's also renting it on behalf of the Aniyim. So the same way that he represents the class of Aniyim to take the Meiser Ani, he also represents the class of Aniyim to take the rental here and take possession of the land. And so therefore it's the same owner in both cases. Vivaitemo, or another answer is, Shiny Rabbi Akiva, the other Aniyim Avo. The other possibility is that Rabbi Akiva is an extension of the Aniyim. Since he is the Gabai Tzlaka, and the Gabai of the Aniyim, he's as if he is an extension or he is connected. So the two ways that the Gemara answer are either Rabbi Akiva is acting on behalf of the Aniyim completely, and therefore when he gets the Meiser Ani, he's acting on their behalf. When he rents the land, he's also acting on their behalf. So in essence, the Aniyim rented the land and they took the Meiser Ani. The other way the Gemara answers is, no, Eino Chanami, the Meiser Ani belongs to the Aniyim, he's taking on their behalf, and Rabbi Akiva is renting the land for himself. But Rabbi Akiva's unique standing or status makes it that he and the Aniyim are not really separate entities. They have a connection that makes them almost one unit, which would not be true in other cases where you have two separate parties. We can't really separate between a Rabbi Akiva and the Aniyim. Because of his position, he is as if a party to the transaction with the Aniyim. And so even though it's him renting the land, it's as if it's good enough for the Aniyim because they're not considered to be separate entities. Amar Rava. Rava makes a statement. Lo shanu elishanatan dmei kulan. It's only true if you give the money for the entire purchase. Aval lo natan dmei kulan. If you don't give money for the entire purchase, lo kana. You do not acquire it. What is Rava speaking about? So Rashi says over here that Rava is qualifying the Kinyan Agav and saying that a Kinyan Agav only works if you have paid not only for the karka, but you have paid for the metaltalim as well. Because d'chiyachazke b'karka adate l'mikne kule achazke. Because then when you take possession of the karka, you're doing it with in mind to take the metaltalim. Since you already paid for the metaltalim, the mocher knows that he's giving the metaltalim. You know you're taking the metaltalim. Therefore, the kinyan agav works because you brought it into the rubric of this or sphere of the kinyan that you are doing. And so therefore, the dmei kulan is essential here in order to do that. That's the way the Rashi learns, and the Ritva also learns that way. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rabbeinu Chananel say Rava's din is not about a kinyan agav, but rather about the cases that are coming up. One of them is the case, this is what the Rif says, when you're machar yud sadot v'yud medinot, you sell 10 fields in 10 different countries, then in order to take acquisition, if you take possession of one, you can take possession of all of them. Rava says it's only when you've paid for all 10 fields. So that's the way that the Rif learns this qualification. The Rabbeinu Chananel learns that the fact that a karka is nikne b'shtar, Kenyan karka works only up to the amount of money that you have paid. So a shtar is a vehicle of acquisition of a field only up to the amount of money that you put up already or that you have paid. If he didn't pay for it, then the Kenyan shtar can't go beyond the amount of money that you have there. So that's a three different ways to learn this lo shanu of Rava. Again, the Ritva and Rashi learned that it has to do with the continuation of what we said before rather than what's coming up. The Rif and the Rach, on the other hand, learned that lo shanu Rava is about the next cases that we're about to speak about in the Gemara, not the previous case. Ritva and Rashi said it's about the Kinyan Agav, that you have to have the full amount of money paid in order for the Metaltalin to come. So now, Israel says, Tanya Kavote de Rava, we have a braita that supports Rava's position. Yofi koach ha-kesef mi koach ha-shtar. Acquisitions through kesef are better or stronger than a Kinyan shtar. Koach ha-shtar mi koach ha-kesef. On the other hand, a shtar sometimes has the upper hand or a leg up on a Kinyan kesef. Kesef is a stronger form of kinyan in the fact that it's able to redeem something that's hekdesh. it's able to redeem Maaser Sheni. That's because in both of those cases, there's a specification for Kesef and Kesef only, and therefore Shtar is not a vehicle for redemption. Mashenkein Bishtar, which is not true by a Shtar can't be used to redeem Maaser Sheni, because there it says, V'tzarta Kesef B'yadecha. And by Hekdesh, whether we learn that from Gzer Shel, but the Maaser Sheni, or whether because it also says the word Kesef, by Hekdesh, teaches you that a Shtar cannot work by Hekdesh. On the other hand, B'yofekoch Hashtar, Shatar Motzi B'vat Yisrael, Mashenkein B'Kesef. Shtar is also more powerful than Kesef, because a Shtar is the bill of divorce, and can be used to dissolve a marriage. Kesef, money, cannot be used to dissolve a marriage. So each one of them has an upper hand in a certain case. Both of them have a leg up on mikoach hazakah. Then a kinyan chazaka. Koach hazakah mikoach shnehem. And a kinyan chazaka also has something over the strength of a kesef and shtar. Yofek koach shnehem. What is the power of Kesef and Shtar above Chazakah? Shnehem konim be'Eved Ivri. They are both vehicles for acquiring an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri you can acquire through Kesef. Acquire an Eved Ivri through Shtar. Mashenkein b'Chazakah, the one way you cannot acquire an Eved Ivri is through Chazakah, which is through having him act like a slave, or having him do some sort of melacha that indicates he's a slave. That will work by an Eved Kenani whose property. An Eved Ivri who is not property, that type of kinyan will not work with him. A kinyan chazakah does not work by him. Yofek koach chazakah. The kinyan chazakah is better than kesef and shtar. Shechazakah. Because in the case of chazakah, machalo eser sadot, if he sold him 10 fields, be'eser midinot, in 10 different countries, kevin shechzik b'achad mehem, as soon as you do a chazakah on one of them, kan'am kulam, you acquire all of them. But where is that true? That if he put up all the money, if he paid for all 10 fields, when he does the kinyan chazakah on one of the fields, he also acquires the remaining fields. So this is that qualification which says that when you put up money, your kinyan can be more expansive. It's only a chazakah on one of the fields. Yet, that chazakah works to acquire all the fields, along or akin to what Rashi said before, because the monies indicate what you're trying to acquire. And therefore, the kinyan can be expanded to influence or include all these items because both parties know that that's what the acquisition is. But you don't pay for the other fields, it takes it away, meaning that the kinyan that you're doing now is much more directed rather than be a more expansive kinyan because you haven't paid for the other fields. Aval, lo natan lo dmei kulan, if he does not pay for the entirety of all those fields, lo kanal keneged ma'utav, your kinyan is only as good as the money. And that there's a direct correlation between the money that's put up and the kinyan. Your kinyan is solidifying, is having gemirat hadat on whatever you have paid for. If you paid for the whole thing, the kinyan's good enough or great enough to capture everything. If you haven't paid for everything, then it's not big enough or great enough to capture anything besides what you have paid for. Again, so this is the shita, the rift that says, that's what Rova was speaking about. Rova's thinking about this case of the 10 fields. And that's what he's qualifying over here about the ma'ot, and that's what the Braita supports. The Braita says exactly what Rova says. And the Rach, or the Beinu Hanano, says that over here, the chiddush is that shtar is only able to do a kinyan, keneged ma'otav. And that's what Rova is saying. Rova is saying a kinyan shtar only works up to the amount of money that you've put up. And that's what's supported by the Braita. The Braita tells you that. That the kinyan shtar is only as good as the money that you have put up over there. Tosfot over here asks a question and says, I don't understand why you need the money here. If you put up all the money, then why do you need a kinyan shtar anymore? Why do you need a kinyan chazaka anymore? Kesef is one of the three kinyanim that we saw work by karka. Kesef, shtar, and chazaka. If you put up all the money, then you have a kinyan kesef. What do you need a kinyan shtar for? What do you need a kinyan chazaka for anymore? So Tosafot gives a couple answers. Ve'ish lomar, demari ba'atrad lokono b'kaspo. Says it's a location where they do not make kinyanim through kesef. We already saw that in yesterday's daf, that sometimes in a place where they write a shtar, the shtar is the final leg, and that's what makes the kinyan. The kesef is not the kinyan, because in those locations, people are not somchim da'atan until they see the shtar, or until they get the document that corroborates the sale. So if that's the case, then the kinyan kesef by itself would not have worked in this case. That's one answer. For Omer Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rabbeinu Chananel says, "B'matana mi'akana kulam shechzik ba'achad mehem below kesef." So Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that the answer to this question is it's not a mecher. over here, but rather we're talking about a matano. Basically, yes, we're talking about mecher here, but it tells us something about matano, which is that mecher, you require there to be kesef. But okay, so then the kinyan is a kinyan kesef at the end anyway. The nafkamina comes up in a gift where there's no money changing hands, and the only kinyan that you have here is kinyan chazaka or kinyan shtar, that will work even without the monies or the value being there. Rav Shmuel Meirva Perish. And then here's a third way that Tosfot deals with it. The case is where the seller already owes money to the buyer. They have an outstanding loan that is there. So the seller is actually a debtor to the buyer. And since he has a debt, what's going to happen here is he's going to sell the field with the forgiveness of the loan. So the buyer is going to forgive the outstanding loan to the seller. And with the forgiveness of that loan, he's purchasing the field. So what Rav Shmuel Meirva says over here is that's not a kinyan kesef. We say that by kiddushin, that if you're mekadesh b'milveh, it doesn't work, because the ma'ot lahotzanit knew. So that's not good enough to be a kinyan kesef. So therefore, you need either a kinyan chazak or a kinyan shtar over here, even though he's paying money. And the money, we know how much it is, because it's the amount of the loan. So here, he can be giving the whole value of the 10 fields, but that's through forgiveness of a loan, not through actual kesef. And therefore, you don't have a kinyan kesef. And that's why you need the kinyan chazaka or the kinyan shtar over here. So those are three different ways that Tosafot says why you need a chazaka over here when you already have kesef that is changing hands. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Acha Brei de Ravika. Rav Acha Brei de Ravika says, I can prove that Shmuel is right. Teida. She'ilu masar lo eser behemot b'afsar echad. If a person gave over 10 animals with one rein, v'amalei knei, and he says him take possession of it, milo kani, does he not take possession of all 10 animals? Now, Tosafot asks the question right away. He says, wait a minute. If he hands them the reins of 10 animals, then he's not making a kinyan on one of them. He's making a kinyan on all 10 of them. So that can't be the case over here, because then what type of proof is that? Oh, what? If you take possession of all 10 animals, you make a kinyan on all 10 animals. That's not what we're trying to prove here. We're trying to prove here that if you make a kinyan on one of them, it makes a kinyan on all 10 of them at once. So that can't be, that's what Tosafot says here, that it can't be that you're literally taking hold of the reins. Because if you take hold of all the 10 reins, which say are bundled together or tied together, and you take them, then of course you make a kinyan on the 10 animals. It has nothing to do with our case. So what Tosafot suggests is a case here where the animals are tied together. They're tied together one after the next, and then you make a kinyan on one of them by grabbing its hair or grabbing its hooves, and that's how you make the kinyan. So your kinyan is only on one of them. But that kinyan spreads to the other animals because the animals are tied together. They're reins. Each one is tied next to the other. If you have them in a row, they're all tied. One after the next, they're tied. So when you pick up or you do something to the first animal, it is megalgel on all the other animals. It affects all the other animals because of the fact that they're tied together. And again, Tosafot qualifies over here and says, Venir dafka, it's not time to make kol ha-behemot. Again, here, it's only if you paid for all the animals. It can't be that you paid for one animal and then you take an acquisition here and you have to pay for the rest. Here, when you make the kinyan, you have to have enough monies to determine the extent of the kinyan. So if you have all the money paid up, then your kinyan will be big enough to capture all these items. So you need two things. You need the money put up, plus you need something that connects between the animals. And that's what's saying here. You need an afsar that connects between them, and you have the monies that make it, that's the amount. So when it says, Amalei, midomi, how can you compare the cases? Over there, when you're talking about the animals, there's a connection between all the animals. And so therefore, when you pick up one, it's as if you picked up all of them because of the attachment. By karka, that's not the case. This piece of land has nothing to do with the piece of land in another country. Just because you made a chazaka here has nothing to do with that piece of land over there. So that's the difference between them, and it's not a proof what you're saying. I'll prove to you that they do not work. You can't make a kinyan here. Ilu masar lo eser behemot b'afsar echad. Because if he gave him 10 animals with one reins, v'amar lo zoknei, and he says to them, take possession of this one, mikani, does he take possession of all of them? No. Because he said, take possession of this one. When you take possession of this one, that means this one literally. Even though they're all attached, because he specified this one, then that's all he gets is this one. It's going to be the same thing by the karka. When he says, go take possession, k'nei, he's taking possession of this field and nothing more. The Gemara says, midomi, can't compare the cases. Hotom gufim michulakim. By the animals, each animal is an independent entity. Since it's an independent entity, if he specifies to acquire one of them, then he's saying to the exclusion of the others because they are separate entities. On the other hand, hocha, with land, sadna da'ara chadhu. It's a very interesting expression. Rashi says sadna means the anvil. The anvil of the land is one. Or basically, it's a big block. All of earth is attached. All of earth is one big unit. They're not considered to be separate units. If you have a field here and a field there, so even though in terms of your ownership, each one of those is independent, but in terms of their connection, meaning that are they a single unit? Are they separate units? The truth is that all land is one big unit. And therefore, if you make a chazakah on one of them, it can capture other pieces of land because the other piece of land is not considered to be separate or independent of earth. Earth, land, it's all one big unit. And that's what it means. Sadna da'ara chadhu. And therefore, that would overcome the problem because the kinyan here works for one field and grabs all the other 10 fields because they're all attached. Since they're all attached, then that's why it works over here. In the case by the animals, when he says take this one, then that one works because you specified only that one to the exclusion of the others. Even if they're tied together, the fact that they are separate animals makes it that when you specify one, you cannot include the others. By a field, since they're all one big field in a sense, or one big landmass, then when you take one of them, you automatically get the others because it's as if you took possession of all of them. Now, and that's how actually the Ritva explains how a Kinyan Agav works. That a Kinyan Agav works because you make the metalkalim and the karka into a guf echad. Meaning that just like we're saying over here, the way that you have an acquisition of a single item carries along with it other items. So you have a field that you're acquiring, and agav that field, you're grabbing 9 other fields or 10 other fields. Or you're taking one animal into possession because they're tied together. When you take one animal, it's as if you're acquiring all the animals. It's because in each of these instances, we are making them into a single entity or a single unit. Asadna da'ara chadhu. So therefore, when you take possession of one field, you take possession of all. The animals, when you tie them together, they're considered to be one unit. So therefore, when you make a kinyan on one of them, your kinyan expands or is a kinyan on all of them because they're considered to be one entity now. And so the Ritva explains that kinyan agav works in the same way. That's what the sugya is doing over here. Because kinyan agav works the same way that this kinyan works, which is they become a single unit. They become one. The karka and the metaltalim become one unit, and becoming one unit, when you do a kinyan on the karka, the metaltalim come along because now they are a single unit. The way that the Birkat Shmuel explains over here, the reason that the Ritva says that is because the kinyan, the sadna and the ara, or this concept of sadna ara, accomplishes two things. One is it causes the chazaka of the sadeh to work for all the other sadot. But in addition to that, it removes the problem of zuknei. It removes the problem of, as if this guy said to you, just take possession of this item, and not and the other items. And therefore, in the kinyan agav, you might have had a problem, which is that the kinyan agav, one kinyan can work to capture other items. But over here, where the owner tells you, just take possession of the land, and he doesn't mention the metaltalim, then that might have meant, it's as if you said, take the land and not the metaltalim. Once you make them into a single entity, when he says take possession of the land, he's really saying take possession of the land and the metaltalim together. And that's why the Ritva wants them to be a guf echad, to be a single entity by the kinyan agav, just like by the sadna da'ara chadhu. Because sadna da'ara accomplishes two things. It accomplishes the fact that one kinyan can work to grab multiple items, but also it makes it that it's not as if the seller sends you take this and nothing else. Because it's one unit, and therefore it's not as if he said to you, just take this. And so too, the Ritva is saying the same thing by the Kinyan Agav. That if you had not said that they're one unit, then yes, one Kinyan can apply to multiple items, like we're saying here. But then when he tells you to take possession of the land, it would be almost as if he's saying to you, take possession of the land to the exclusion of the metaltalim. But once they're a guf echad, once they're a single entity, when he says take possession of the land, it's as if he's saying take possession of the land and the metaltalim together. That's why the Ritva says that the Kinyan Agav works that way in order to overcome both of the deficits that are there if you don't say sadna da'ara chadhu. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, zokekin et nechasim. This is the fact that the nechasim she'in lam achrayut, metaltalim, if you take a shvua on them, then you can put that shvua also on the nechasim she'yesh lam achrayut onto the karka. Karka is a standalone entity you cannot make a shvua on. On the other hand, if you already are making a shvua metaltalim, we can force you also to take a shvua on the karka. Mar wants to know, min olon, where does this idea of gugul shvua come from? As we know, it comes from sota. How do you know that this rolling of the shva, meaning expanding the shva, once you're taking a shva, we're going to throw in everything? Where do we know that from? Shnemar. Because it says by the sotava, amra isha, amen, amen. The woman says, after the kohen gives her the speech about the sota, she says, amen and amen, twice. Vitznan, amahi omerit amen, amen. Mishnah says, why is she saying amen twice? Amen ala Allah, amen ala shvua. It's an amen on the curse. It's an amen on the shvua, that she takes a shvua to the veracity of her statement that she did not have an extramarital affair. Amen imizze. Amen that I didn't have an extramarital affair with this individual. Amen imimishacher. The other amen says, even from someone else. Amen shalosa titi arusa. Amen that I never was a sotar. I never had this problem when I was an arusa. Unisua, or when I was married. Bishomer Yabam, or while I was waiting for Yibum, Uknusa, or after already Yibum was performed, none of these cases was I unfaithful or did I have an extramarital affair. So that's the list of items that are here. Now Tosfot asks, how do you get this? You have so many different items here. How do you get that from the Amein here? Two Ameins teach you all this? I mean that you, it seems like you need like 15 Ameins to get all this stuff in. So why do two Ameins do it? So Tosfot says that one Amein would have sufficed for everything that's written explicitly in the Parsha. So things like the Allah, the Shvua, Mi'ish Zeh, Mi'ish Acher, all of those items are written in the Parsha explicitly. So that would be covered by one Amein. The second Amein comes to teach you Arusa and Shomer Yavam, which are not written in the Parsha, and that's what gives you that secondary item. So Tosfot says that the first Amein would have covered a lot of items because they're explicit in the Pasuk. They're explicit there. When you say Amein, you're answering Amein to all those items. The question is the second Amein. What is that doing? That adds in Arusa and Shomer Yavam would not have been obvious, as we'll see now. Why? So the original assumption of the Gemara is that all the cases in the Mishnah are independent cases. It's saying Ozu, Ozu, Ozu. In each one of these cases, this individual will take a Shvua. But then the Gemara has the question, Hay Arusa Yichidami. What's this case of Arusa? Ilema dekani la kishihi Arusa. That he warned her when she was in Arusa, when they were engaged halachically, he warned her not to seclude with such and such a person. The kamashki lakishi Arusa. And he has her drink the mesota. They have witnesses to the fact that she secluded with this individual. After her arus told her not to do that. Then you want to bring her up to Yerushalayim to drink mesota. Vatznan, it's an explicit Mishnah. Arusa v'shomer yavam lo shotot. That arusa and shomer yavam do not have the ability to drink the mesota. And therefore, lo not lot ktuba. If they were accused in this situation, they will lose their ktubot. Because it was their fault. I mean, the husband told them not to seclude with such and such an individual. They go ahead and seclude. The Torah does not give them permission to drink the mesota. So now, we have two choices. Either he divorces them and gives them a ktubah, or he divorces them and doesn't give them their ktubah. Well, who caused the problem here? Who was the one who precipitated the divorce over here? It was the behavior of the woman. And since her behavior is what caused it, she's going to lose her ktubah unless she can bring proof to the contrary. She can't drink the mesota, so that's not going to help her. So unless she has a deem, she's going to be out her ktubah because of her behavior. But what you see here from the Mishnah is that it doesn't work. My time up. Tachad isheicha mar rachmanut. It says that you were unfaithful under your husband. Isheich means nisuin. Isheich is not when you're an arusa. Veleka, and that's lacking over here. So you can't have them drink mesota. So that can't be the case here. Ela dekoni la kashi arusa. He warned her when she was engaged to him, halachli, do not seclude with so-and-so. Ben nistara kashi arusa. She was secluded while she was an arusa. And then, v'kamashki lakshi nisua. But he doesn't take her up to drink the mesota until they are fully married. Because only a nisua can drink the mesota. So all the activity took place while she was engaged halachli. She was warned not to seclude with the individual. She secluded with the individual while she was in arusa. And then after nisuin, he takes her up to drink the mesota. So now the pasuk does talk about that case. Tachad isheich. She's now his wife. Mi bat kilo mayo. Where the mesota work? Exactly what David just asked. V'nika ish me'avon. The Torah says that the man has to be clean of any sin. In order for the mesota to work, the man's got to have a completely clean slate. V'zmach ish nuka me'avon. If the man is clean and he has no sins, then his wife will be checked by the mesota. The man doesn't have a clean state. Then the waters don't check his wife. And over here, he doesn't have a clean state because if he warned her not to seclude with an individual, and she's secluded with that individual prior to Nisuin, he's not allowed to marry her. She's a surah to him. She's a surah to him, and he marries her, then he's dead of the Isur. That means that he's not menukeh me'avon. He's not menukeh me'avon. He can't have her drink when she's in Nisuah, because he's disqualified because of the fact that he slept with her be Isur. Ella, what's the case of Arusa? Must be Ayidei Gilgul. We have no manifestation of an Arusa by herself. The only reason we're asking about Arusa is because we're making her drink anyway while she's in Nisua, so we drag along Arusa. Now, since the Gemara can't find any case of Arusa where she's standalone, that means that the Mishnah there must be speaking about a case of Gilgul Shua, and that's a proof that there is Gilgul Shua over here. Now, this Gemara is a shortened version, and Rashi notes that already. And Rashi says that Lo Garsinan. So Rashi leaves out a part here. It says, Hachi Garsinan, Elalav Ayidei Gilgul. That right after we have our statement over here, he says, then it's Gilgul Shua is the answer. Velo Garsinan. And we do not include here, the Kani Lakishi Arusa, Mistatem Nichlasadu Chupa. It's not a case where she was an Arusa. She was secluded. And then they entered the Chupa without Bi'ah. So Rashi says there was an alternate Girs over here, which gave another answer to the question, that you don't have to get to Gilgul Shua, because we can't have a case of Meisota by an Arusa. And Rashi says, we don't put that in the Girsa. And then Rashi, in the next Rashi, says, why not? V'kasha, havalei l'ukma v'dekani l'arusa v'istatra. It's a case where he warned her while they were halakhically engaged. She secluded while they were halakhically engaged. U'mashkelak mishenichnasa l'chupa. And he gives her a drink after he brings her into the chupa. I mean, chupa generates nisuin, but chupa is not necessarily synonymous with bi'ah. And that means there's a possibility that she become a nisuah, and nisuah is allowed to drink the mesota, but he did not have bi'ah. And since he didn't have bi'ah, then he's not disqualified. You're careening about tachari sheikh. So now it's tachari sheikh because they're fully married. And he hasn't had bi'ah with her yet, even though they've had the chuppah, they've had the whole ceremony, they've done the nisuin, but he didn't have bi'ah with her. So Rashi says, the Gemara in Yevamot asks this question and says, why don't you include this case? We said that the answer in the Gemara in Yevamot is, besides your husband. It says here that you had an extramarital affair, and therefore you slept with a man besides your husband. That means that the rule is that the Baal must have engaged with his wife first, and then only afterwards had the extramarital affair. But if she's never had bi'ah with her husband, then mi baladei sheikh, besides your husband, doesn't apply. What do you mean? She's never had bi'ah with anyone besides the guy that she had the extramarital affair with, not besides her husband, and therefore does not qualify. So that's why the Gemara in Yevamot rejects that. Because you need the Shechivat HaBaal to be before the Shechivat HaBoel. Kielkach ein lash bi'ah znut shele rusin b'shuminyan el yadei gilgul. That shows you that there's no way to get a shvuah or a mesota by a arusa unless it's done a yadei gilgul shvuah. Ubi yivamot, the Gemara gives another answer. Ika the mukilak shebale arus b'beit abiyah. That he had bi'ah with her while she was an arus, an arusa. While they were halakhically engaged. Whether that means that he generated kiddushin that way, or after they were nitkadesh, he had bi'ah with her, even though it's not proper. He had bi'ah with her while she was an arusa and he was an arus. Then she had the extramarital affair, so then it qualifies. He was before the arusa. So you have a case like that. So he says, the Gemara did give an answer like that. But Ula lo sfir le haushinuya. Ula over here, who learns Gilgul Shua from Sutta, does not like that answer, because it's a difficult, far-fetched answer, and Rashi says, we reject it. That's why Arusa only appears, only comes up, because of Gilgul Shvuah. Tosafot asks a number of questions over here. He says, first of all, the problem of Nikah Ish Me'avon, why don't we just say that the husband slept with her b'shogeg? He didn't do it intentionally. He bala b'shogeg, shalo yada l'achar mikan. He only got the information about this stira after he already had slept with her. So he warns her while she's a arusa, do not seclude with this individual. She secludes with the individual, we have a din to that fact, but that information does not become public until after they have nisuin. So when the husband slept with her, he wasn't doing anything wrong. He had no idea that she had secluded and he's a shogeg. So that's minikai ish me'avon. So Tosafot says something amazing over here. It says, v'ishlomar d'shani hocha, kevin d'vishat hashka yudea shebalei b'isur. Since at the time that he's giving her to drink the mesota, he knows now that he did the improper thing before, Ben Shabbal Eb Shogeg, Ben Shabbal Mezid, Lab Minik Mukun Eb Avon. You're not considered to be a clean slate. You're not considered to be a Nukla Avon because now you know the information that it was done by Yisur. Aval, Ayyadei Gilgul. So then why does Gilgul Shvua work over here? Bishat Ashkam, Nukla Avon, Karayin Ebe. Because Gilgul Shvua says, oh, I want to know that not only did you not have an extramarital affair when we were married, I want to know that when we were halakhically engaged, you also didn't have it. Well, if she had an extramarital affair while they were halakhically engaged, when the husband slept with her, he did an avon. It's the same shogeg. So the answer is that he doesn't know that information. That's the difference. In the case by where he's bringing her up to drink the meisotah because of her activities while they were halakhically engaged, he knows now that when he slept with her to do the nisuin, he did something wrong. And therefore, he's no longer called the Nika Ish Me'avon. The other hand, in the case where he's doing Gilgul Shua, he has no idea that whether she had any extramarital affair while she was in Arusa. And therefore, even if it was an extramarital affair, he's not called a problem of Avon. Because he doesn't know. At this point, when he's bringing her and having her take the Shua and making her drink the Meisuta, he has no clue as to whether he did something wrong. So that it remains in the realm of Shogeg. And it's not a problem of Nika Ish Me'avon. That's the first thing Tosfot asks. The second thing Tosfot asks is, Vikasha, why does Rashi eliminate this piece from the Gemara here? This Girsa over here from the Gemara seemingly is a good answer from the Gemara in Yivamot. So Tosfot says that what Rashi says here, that Ula doesn't hold of that answer, cannot be the answer to the question here as to why the Gemara didn't bring that possibility of the answer that and that means that the Gemara here is following the position, or the other position, the Gemara in Yevamot. The reason it doesn't say that is because it's saying that the answer to this question is, it's a case where they had a chuppah without biyah. If you had a chuppah without biyah, then how can you prove anything about Gilgul Shvua over here? If you had a chuppah without biyah, then you have a case where you can have an arusa who ends up taking a Shvua. If that's the case, it's not because of Gilgul Shvua, but because of the fact that an arusa can take a Shvua. The time of the lo ratzel kumei bichnichtes chad the chupa velo nivala. So then, why didn't the Gemara set it up over here by a case where they went into the chupa and no bia? The savalak is Shmuel. So hold the Shmuel. The Gemara ain chupa lepsulot. Chupa doesn't work if you can't get married. This woman who's a surah to him now, the chupa doesn't work because she had an extramarital affair or has the problem of an extramarital affair. Kevin shnivala ain chupa tofesepa. She never makes it past the threshold to be called his wife once they do the chuppah, because the chuppah wasn't functional here because of her activities beforehand. So then he says, "Vim tomar the Rav, tamar yesh chuppah lepsulot." But Rav holds there is a chuppah lepsulot. Imkain yocholu ukma, dekani lakshi arusa, v'nechnasa the chuppah v'lo nivala. Imkain gugul shva minale. Then how does he know about gugul shva? Yishlar v'nafala me ishzeh o me ishacher. Says, wait, the permissioner also tells you about another case. The case in the Mishnah that we're learning Gilgul Shvua is about Arusa. But Rav can say, you can learn that from the fact that it says here that you amained, that you didn't have an extramarital affair with this guy and an extramarital affair with someone else. Well, the someone else is not a relevant party over here. And how do you get him in? That's because there is a Gilgul Shvua. So that Gilgul Shvua brings it out. So then why doesn't Shmuel say the same thing? Or why doesn't Shmuel learn it out from Mishzeh and Mishacher? He says the reason that Shmuel is unwilling to use that as the source is because there's a difference between Ish Zeh and Ish Acher versus Karka and Metaltalin. When it comes to Karka and Metaltalin, Karka can never have a Shvua taken about it. Period. There's just no Shvua by Karka. Metaltalin then allow you to bring a Shvua from Metaltalin over to Karka. Over here, when you say Ish Zeh, Ish Acher, you say, well, I'll have a Shvua about this guy, also a Shvua about that guy. That guy is not relevant in this particular case. But in other cases, that guy could be the object of a shvua. He's not precluded from being a part of a shvua. Just happens to be he's not the person in suspicion right here. But if he was the one who was suspected, then Enoch and Ami could take a shvua about that individual. Therefore, Shmuel says you can't prove from Gilgul Shvua, Mishzeh, Mishacher, to Karka Mitaltlim, because they're two different types of Gilgul Shvua. So then he has a problem now for Rav, who says that that is the source. Why doesn't Rav say? He says, that Rav learns that the Ishacher can even be from a minor. A minor you can't force to take a Shvua when it comes to a minor and Sota. So by himself, independently, there would be no Shvua. Only because of the Gilgul Shvua over here does the Katan get included. And Ula doesn't say Katan doesn't sound like a reasonable case. Ishacher is a reasonable case. So that's how Tosfot gets over the problem, leaves the Girsa intact, about chupa, or the question of how you can have a chupa without bia. But he says this is according to Shmuel, who says there is no such thing as a chupa without bia when the whole marriage is a pasul marriage. For Rav, who says there is a chupa, and Yochanami will say there is a chupa over here, but he'll learn it out of ish zeh and ish acher, and we discuss the reasons as to why Shmuel and Rav would differ on whether it works to use ish zeh and ish acher as a Gilgul Shvua. Now the Gemara says, Ashkan Sota, di Surah. That's Sota, which is Isser. Mamona min Olan. How do you know that in monetary manners, Gilgul Shvua works? Maybe this is unique to Isura, where we want to be makrish people in Isura, so we tell them to take a Shvua or multiple Shvuot. But by Mamon, we don't have a vested interest in expanding the Shvuot over here. Tana de Beishmael, Kabachomer. That's what Tana Shmael tells you, that it's a Kabachomer. Umas Sota, Shlo Nitna Lihit Ba, Beirachad. By sota, where a single aid cannot generate the requirement to drink the mei sota, you need two aidim that she's secluded with an individual. An aid achad is not sufficient. And over there we say gilgul shua works. Megalgalin. There we say gilgul shua works. Mamon, she nitan lidba ve'aid achad. By mamon, where an aid achad can generate a shua. An aid achad can't generate obligation of monies, but he can force the counterparty to take a shvua. So if an Eid Echad has enough power to make him take a shvua, Enudin Shemigalim, certainly then Gilgul Shvua should apply. Meaning that if our threshold for generating the shvua is lower by Mamon than it is by Yisur, then that Kavachomer shows you that it's easier to run shvua by Mamon than it is by Yisur. And because of that, if we're Megalgal by Yisura, we're also going to be Megalgal by Mimona. So now, Ashkachan Bivadai. We found a case where we know for certain. Safek Minolan. How do we know a case of Safek that it works? So Ashkachan Bivadai, where we're Megalgo Shvua, Rashi says, when you have a Tanat Bari Bidabar, that when you have a full-fledged Ta'ana, like a case of Shvua by Karkaot, or it was a mode of a Mixat, or things like that, where there is a reason that the Torah would obligate him. Were it not for the Gzeirat HaKatuv by Karka, it would have obligated him to take a Shvua. So we say here that the Gilgul Shvua allows you to move the Shvua over even though there's an exemption because of the Gzeirat HaKatuv. But what about cases where you do not have a reason to make him take the Shvua, and it's not just Patur mi Gzeirat HaKatuv, it's Patur because you don't have a definitive claim. You only have a maybe claim. For instance, Rashi says, Safek Minayin Tainat Shema. In a case where partners dissolve their partnership, or a sharecropper is taking his possession away, there you can't force them to take a shvua unless there's suspicion. Over here you have no suspicion. How do I know that you can also bring in that and force them to take a shvua on that matter, even though we don't have a definitive claim against you? How do I can draw that in? And as the Rashi says over here, the Kal Vachomer won't do that job. Sota kol shvuata safek. Because by the case of Sota, I know that you can do Gilgul Shvua by Safek, because the core item is a Safek. The whole Sota is built around a Safek. So just like the accusation and the whole Mesota is because we suspect something about her, therefore I can do a Gilgul Shvua on other suspicions without any articulable reason for the Shvua, simply because you're taking the Shvua. On the other hand, by Mamon, where the Ikar Shvua, when I force you to take a Shvua by Mamon, it's because I have a definitive claim against you. So then when I do the Gilgul Shvua, that should only be Megalgo, the definitive Shvua. When you have another absolute claim against me, you can throw that in. If you have a Gzerta Katub that says you're not Chayav and Shvua, throw it in. But if you just have these suspicions, or you just want to take a Shvua about anything that's out there, why should that work by Mamon? So that's what Rashi says, is that you can only have a Gilgul Shvua of the nature of the Shvua that is the base Shvua. By Sota, the base Shvua is a Safek. So when you expand it, you can expand it to other Sfekot. By Mamon, the base Shvua is about a Vadai, where you have an accusation, a Bari claim. So then you can only expand it to other Bari claims. You can't just expand it to other suspicions or random items that you want with the Shvua. And that's why the Gemara says here, Minolon. Where is that from? Which is brought also by the Rashba as the nature of the question. Then he brings the Yeshomrim, that Sota is also like a Vadai because it's a Raglaim Ledavar. Meaning that the question here is, Ashkachan Bevadai, by Sota, we find the case of Vadai. Safek Minolon, how do we know that it works by Safek as well? Because by Sota, since you have circumstantial evidence to the fact that she had an extramarital affair. And we saw that many, many times in the Gemara and Sota, that this woman is not innocent. She was told not to seclude. She secluded with this individual. She did a lot of things that cause her to be in this predicament right now. And therefore, we treat the Sota as if she is Vadai. If she is considered to be as if she had the extramarital affair, she's a surah to her husband, unless she gets this whole thing clarified up. So we treat her as if she's a Vadai. So there, if you're learning out of Sota, that's a case of Vadai. So how do you know about the case of Safek? That's the nature of the question of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Nemra Shvua Bechutz, Benemra Shvua Bifnim. We have Shvua that is mentioned, Bechutz means in Beit Din. Nemra Shvua Bifnim, we have a Shvua Bifnim, which is Sota. Ma Shvua Mora Bifnim, Asaba Safek Kevadai. Over there, by the Shvua Bifnim, by the Sota, we make a Safek look like a Vadai, because we make her take a Shvua, even though it's only suspicions over here. So we make the Safek as if it is a Vadai. So too, the Shvua and Beit Din, they make any Safek be like a Vadai. So Tosfot asks over here, once we know this Din of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, why do we need to learn the Din of Gilgul Shvua through a Kal Vachomer from Sota to Mamon? This whole Memetzinu here should be enough of a limud to teach us both Gilgul Shvua and Gilgul Shvua in the case of Safek. So he says, "Eish lomar de'ilav b'kav v'chom b'haim mametzino da'achal lo mametzino lemelef de'mamonim isura lo yofina." You have two problems over here. You have one problem is that normally Easter and Mamon are different, and so I wouldn't be able to learn from Easter to Mamon because they're not on par. The mametzino is only relevant once I've established that we're allowing this limud from Isura to Mamon to take place. That is generated through the kav v'chomer. So once I've established the kav v'chomer that allows me to learn from Isura to Mamon, then the Memetzinu Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai becomes relevant and says, just like the nature of the Shvua by Sota is this, so too the nature of Shvua by Beit Din will be the same. But I can't originally do that because I wouldn't be able to say, just like here is there, because I wouldn't be able to equate the two Shvuot until I know you can learn from Yisura to Mamona, then I have the opening or the petach to do that. Now, Tosfot points out over here that now that we've opened up Pandora's box, which is that any safek that you have, you can enforce a shvua. What does that mean? Does that mean that anything you dream up, you can make him take a shvua about? So Tosfos says over here, but you have to know, Omer Rabbi, not every safek can you do a gilgul shvua. You need articulable suspicion in order to force a gilgul shvua. Naselo shutaf or aris, meaning that there are reasons to force him to take a shvua here because there is circumstantial evidence that would indicate that there might have been a problem, or there's reason to believe that people are suspicious of each other in these cases. So again, you need this articulable suspicion and circumstances or context which would make it that there's reason to believe he should take a shvua over here. But you can't just come in here and say, ah, you know what, take a shvua on this, 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 and then this. That's not the way that Gilgul shvua works. Now, in the end, is Gilgul Shvua the purview of Beit Din, or is that a purview of the litigants? The litigant says, I want to do a Gilgul Shvua, and Beit Din says, fine, we will. Or does Beit Din voluntarily say, let's do Gilgul Shvua over here? So what we know is, and the Ritva says this, is that by Sota, the Beit Din opens and forces the Gilgul Shvua over here. Even if the husband doesn't ask for it, Beit Din will ask for the Gilgul Shvua in that case. But what the Ritva says is that's only in the case of Sota. By the case of Mamon, we would not say that. Why? The shiny Sota, Dabi Isura. Sota is Isur. V'chol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh. We're all responsible for each other. V'chai V'lev V'rushem Isura. And we have to separate people from Isur. So we want to protect the husband from staying together with his wife if she did something wrong because it's Asur for him to be there. Therefore, Ubali Davar Chashivi, the Beit Din is considered as if they're a party to this case, and that's why they can force the Gilgul Shvua. Avahocha de Mimono e lo tayin baldin, ein lanu asot etzmenu orchei adayanim. If the litigant doesn't ask for it, the Beit Din shouldn't become like lawyers and recommend them liftoach be Gilgul. So the Ritva in the end sees that there is still a difference between Sota and Mamon. Sota, Beit Din is the party to the Gilgul Shvua, and they can force the Gilgul Shvua irrespective of what the husband wants, or if he asks for it at all, they do it. But in the case of Mamon, it's in the hands of the litigants, not in the hands of the Beit Din. Beit Din won't suggest it. But if the litigant asks for it, then Beit Din will acquiesce and allow for the Gilgul Shvuah to take place, but they will not open with it. That's the difference between Isur and Mamon. That difference stands in the end. On the other hand, the Rosh disagrees with this position of the Ritva and says that even by Dini Mamonot, Beit Din forces a Gilgul Shvuah, at least when it's a Shvuah Doraita. At least when it's a Shvuah Doraita, they will force the Gilgul Shvuah. That is because where the Torah already obligates a Shvuah, and it's only a Gzeir Tekatuv that's protecting them, then in essence, we really want a Shvuah here. It happens to be that they have a dispensation in the Torah. If I can overcome that dispensation of the Torah, Beit Din will act to do the Gilgul Shvuah. So that's why we don't need the litigant to get involved, because Beit Din, in essence, would have asked this guy for a Shvuah. He has a get-out-of-jail card which says, I don't have to take the Shvuah here. But if already I have another mechanism which allows me to force me to take a Shvuah, I will exercise that mechanism. And that machloket might relate to how you translate the word zokek or zokekim over here, which is, does the word zokek here mean lashon kesher, a connection that the nechasim she'en achrayut generate a connection to the karka which allows for a shvuah? Or do you say the lashon of zokekim here is lashon chiyuv? I mean, they obligate you to take a shvuah about the other items, and that might have to do with this machloket as to whether the zokekim over here is that the connection allows for a shvuah, or Zokekin, does the connection force a shvuah and generate a shvuah? It's not muchrach, but that could be a part of this machlok between the Ritva and the Rosh as to whether we compel, in Dine Mamononot, the Gilgul shvuah. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Chavchet, Amud Aleph.